From pop culture to politics, this is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A sad day with the departure from our world of a great leader for the United States. And somebody that whether you agree with his politics or you disagree with it, you've got to have respect for the man and for what he achieved in his life. I'm talking about Colin Powell, who died today at the age of 84. He died of COVID. And he died of COVID despite the fact that he was fully vaccinated. But it's very, very important to, for people to understand this is extraordinarily rare. And he also had multiple myeloma. He was battling cancer. He was 84 years old. We will be talking a little bit later with one of his colleagues, four-star General Barry McCaffrey, who knew General Powell, and we'll talk a little bit about what his life, his service, his political history means to the country. We'll also be looking for Nick Rolovich. I mean, not to compare the football coach at Washington State, though they beat Stanford, you got to give them that. But is Nick Rolovich going to beat his reluctance not to get a COVID-19 protection? Probably not. And will that mean so long, sayonara? Happy trails to you, Coach Rolovich. We will cover that story because, of course, there are lots of stories today about the mandate for vaccines kicking in all across the country and particularly right here in the state of Washington. What does that mean and what is right? And speaking of what is right, new polling, which we covered last week, says that the Democrats are in trouble, not because of one policy or another policy, but because of a general attitude to demand bigger government and much bigger government and more spending and a more activist role for the federal government. Catherine Rampell, who is no conservative, wrote a piece for Washington Post basically talking about what Democrats are facing in November unless they moderate their message. We will talk about that also on the Michael Medved Show. And then students. An indication that students may have a great deal of hypocrisy when it comes to diversity and quotas. A bit of an audio sampling of student opinion on that. And plus, incredibly bad news. I mean, it's just one of those things that makes you want to throw up your hands and throw up all the pile of papers. And what the hell? I mean, we have for the first time ever, over a 10-year period, students are doing worse in America at age 13. Why? These are measures that were taken before the pandemic. You can't blame the pandemic. Why are students doing so terribly right now? We will get to that. But first up, there's a story that's almost unbelievable that began yesterday. And it has to do with Kamala Harris and the campaign desperately to try to save the Democratic control of the Virginia State House, of the Virginia governorship. What does Kamala Harris have to do with that? Well, she's got nothing else to do, basically. So she was dispatched to Virginia, and she's going to be dispatched to Virginia every Sunday between now and December 2nd. She was there yesterday. She's speaking to more than 300 black churches all across Virginia that are going to hear from her between Sunday and November 2nd in a video message that will air in church during morning services, meant to boost Terry McAuliffe, the former governor who's trying to recapture the governorship. And according to a brand new Trafalgar poll, McAuliffe is now the underdog. He is now behind, about a point and a half behind. It's very close. But he's behind the Republican, Glenn Youngkin. And what's so astonishing about this is that this is very probably against the law, because for these churches to maintain their tax-exempt status and not to run into problems with the federal government and probably with the state government, they can't get too directly into politics. What do you think, though, if this message, recorded message, is actually played in church? If this were played in your church or synagogue or mosque or Buddhist temple or any religious institution, if you heard this message, aside from the the impulse that I think some people might have to walk out, there's also a question, does this sound like a nonpartisan message that keeps state and church reasonably separated so that religion doesn't get too much into the pulpit? Here is Pastor Kamala Harris this last Sunday, clip 11A.
Greetings, everyone. So when I was growing up, we sang in the choir at Oakland's 23rd Avenue Church of God. We sang hymns about how faith combined with determination will see us through difficult times. And we were taught that it was our sacred responsibility to raise our voice and lift up the voices of our community. One of the most significant ways I believe that we can each use our voice is through our vote. So Virginians, you have the opportunity now to raise your voice through your vote, because it's election time. As you know, this is an important election coming up on Tuesday, November 2nd, and early voting is already underway. I believe that my friend Terry McAuliffe is the leader Virginia needs at this moment.
Nothing political about that. Oh, no, completely nonpartisan. Now, look, she's going to say great words about Glenn Youngkin, I'm sure, right? Clip 11B.
Terry McAuliffe is stepping up again with a clear vision about how to rebuild Virginia's economy for the future, to raise the minimum wage, to make health care more affordable, to give every child a world-class education. Virginians, you deserve a leader who has a vision of what is possible and the experience to realize that vision. Terry McAuliffe is that leader. In 2020, more Virginians voted than ever before, and because you did, you helped send President Joe Biden and me to the White House. This year, I know that you will send Terry McAuliffe back to Richmond. So early voting has already started, and this is the first year that you can vote on Sunday. So please, vote after today's service.
Okay. Is this political? The IRS, and this is a copy from their page, the Internal Revenue Service says, currently the law prohibits political campaign activity by charities and churches by defining a 501c3 organization as one, quote, which does not participate in or intervene in, including the publishing or distributing of statements, any political campaign on behalf of, or in opposition to, any candidate for public office. If you're vice president, do you get to break the rules? Is that what happens with that? We will find out. Another triumph for Kamala Harris. And by the way, every time you hear about her in the news, doesn't it make it seem more and more and more unimaginable that she would ever be a candidate for president of the United States again? Which, of course, leads the Democrats with a dilemma. With a 82-year-old, yes, Biden would be 82 if he ran for re-election, facing sinking popularity and a completely inept and inappropriate vice president, where do they go? I'll tell you where we go, to some of the problems in education and media that are plaguing the country. We'll get to that coming up on The Medved Show. On the Michael Medved Show. There are several reasons to take a look and see some of where we have been and some of where we have gone in the United States today. One is the passing of General Powell, Secretary of State Powell, National Security Advisor Powell, somebody who was a serious consideration for a presidential nomination back in 1996. That was the year that Bob Dole ended up winning the Republican nomination and losing by 8 points to Bill Clinton. But Powell had been an early favorite in that campaign, and he declined to do it. And the reports were at the time that he declined to do it because his wife of nearly 60 years, Alma, who said a wonderful thing about her husband today on his passing, that above everything, he was a family man, which it seems to me is the way all of us should want to be remembered. And General Powell's wife, Alma, apparently feared that he would be assassinated as the first black candidate for president. And, of course, that didn't happen, and he went on for many more years of service to his country. We'll be speaking coming up to General McCaffrey about General Powell and what his legacy means, most importantly. But before that, I was mentioning something else about where we've been. And honestly, if somebody wants to explain it, give it a try, because I can't figure it out. I'm serious. There's no reason other than just coincidence, but it's too much to be a coincidence. The National Journal hotline, they do from time to time an update with a chart of the top fundraisers in politics. And of course, there's all kinds of pieces about the utterly record amounts of money that are being raised for the campaign. Well, first up, the campaign in Virginia that's coming up, which is producing a lot of money, particularly for Terry McAuliffe, the Democratic nominee. But then the upcoming 2022 elections for the U.S. Senate and for the House and for governorships across the country. And already there's a tremendous amount of money being raised by Donald J. Trump for his presumed presidential campaign. But they just put out this chart of the battle for the Senate of the top fundraisers for the Republicans, the top fundraiser for the Democrats, and then the top Democratic challenger and the top Republican challenger. Now, tell me if you notice something about who these figures are. Some of them are very well known, as you would expect. The top overall fundraiser who raised in this quarter an unbelievable total in one state of $9.5 million. That was Raphael Warnock, the former pastor, black pastor, who won one of those Senate seats that gave the Democrats control of the U.S. Senate. And he's one of the most liberal members of the Senate out there. He raised the $9.5 million. And then the top Republican fundraiser, Tim Scott, senator from South Carolina. He raised $8.4 million. He does not have a particularly stiff challenge against him. And it is presumed that he's going to hold on to most of that money for an upcoming presidential campaign, which I think is terrific. I would have no trouble at all supporting Tim Scott if he does become a candidate. I think he'd be an outstanding candidate for the Republicans. Okay, top Republican, Raphael Warnock, top Democrat, Raphael Warnock, top Republican, Tim Scott. And then you move over to the challengers, because those are both incumbent senators. Tim Scott is in the Senate. Raphael Warnock's in the Senate. Someone else who's not in the Senate but very much wants to be is Val Demings. And she is the top Democratic challenger when it comes to her challenge for Senator Marco Rubio in Florida. She's a former police chief, tough cop, effective cop for 28 years. And she is now a congressperson from Orlando, Florida. And she's given that up to challenge Marco Rubio. And she has raised as much as Tim Scott. She's raised $8.4 million. And then you come to who is the top Republican fundraiser to challenge an incumbent U.S. senator? Well, Herschel Walker, who is running against Raphael Warnock, he has raised $3.7 million, so he is the top Republican in terms of fundraising. Now, why am I bringing this to your attention in particular? Because there's something that each of these candidates has in common. They're not only they're all well-known, not only are they all articulate, and are they all effective campaigners and formidable campaigners, they're all black. Everyone. Warnock, Scott, Herschel Walker, and Val Demings. And what does that say? Well, part of what it says is, how would people who believe that America is an incurably racist country, that this is a country that is completely handicapped and crippled and kept down by structural racism, systemic racism, incurable racism, horrible racism, how is it that there's so many people? Because most of these people, I am very sure, I don't think they check to see whether it's white money or black money or Latino money or any kind of, but people are putting their money behind these candidates. And this brings me back for just a moment to Secretary of State Powell. When Colin Powell was appointed Secretary of State, when he was appointed National Security Advisor by President Reagan, it was a big deal. Because one of the things, black people in this country had not been associated before Colin Powell with the top positions in national security. And of course, today we have, it's a commonplace. Powell was followed as Secretary of State. He is followed first as National Security Advisor by Condoleezza Rice, then as Secretary of State. We now have a Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, also a general, who is at the Defense Department. And it's normal. It's no longer, wow, isn't that extraordinary? And we have a Vice President of the United States who happens to be black. And for people who remain blind to the level of change and openness, and again, you cannot possibly look at General Powell's background and read some of the obituaries and think, oh, he was an affirmative action appointee. He was appointed for the sake of diversity. He was appointed for the sake of patriotism and excellence. And again, do I agree with him on everything? No. He ended up supporting Barack Obama twice. But again, I think, though he denied it, it may have something to do with Obama's historic status as well. I will talk a little bit more about General Powell with somebody who has... Barry McCaffrey has served in the United States Army for 32 years, and he is joining us shortly in the very next segment. And he, of course, has his own message to convey about General Powell, who passed away today. But just... a fascinating flashback in context from 2000. And this was the national convention that took place that year in Philadelphia. And it was right after the year that there was a very serious movement to try to nominate General Powell for President of the United States. But he had this to say to the Republican delegates. This is clip 9.
During the almost 7 years since I retired from the Army, I've traveled all across America. I've seen people hard at work providing for their families, giving of themselves, taking care of each other. I've seen them creating wealth for the nation. I've seen an economy transforming itself to seize the promise of the information revolution. I've met so many of our fellow citizens who believe in America to the depths of their heart and who are doing everything they can in their communities to make our nation that more perfect union spoken of in our Constitution. I've been moved yet again to stand in awe of the American dream, which was given birth in this city over 200 years ago, a dream that I have been privileged to live. I've met so many young people who believe in the dream. They're on a road to success. They're being raised in strong families, going to good schools, filling the finest universities, graduating, and then going on to find their place and fortune in this blessed land of ours. Even the youngest of them, still in elementary school, are getting ready for the future, using computers, logging onto the internet, while still enjoying the magic of childhood by curling up with a Harry Potter book. There is so much that is so good and right in America tonight, my friends, that we ought to be very, very proud of this wonderful country of ours.
And again, is that a something like a familiar political speech? Yes, but it dramatizes his very unfamiliar story. His parents were from the West Indies, so he counts not only as somebody who was born in Harlem, grew up in Harlem, but also an immigrant, child of immigrants, and someone who distinguished himself in combat and in other military service. Some of the tributes to General Powell that came in, including one from Colonel Bill Smullen, who was a former chief of staff for General Powell when he was Secretary of State. He got emotional in a video tribute, and there's also a clip from the Secretary of Defense, who considered himself a protege of Colin Powell, speaking about the general today. Clip two.
Would want to be remembered as someone who cared about America more than life itself, and God love him. We're just going to miss him terribly, terribly, terribly.
The world lost one of the greatest leaders that we have ever witnessed. Alma lost a great husband, and the family lost a tremendous father. And I lost a tremendous personal friend and mentor. He has been my mentor for a number of years. He always made time for me, and I could always go to him with tough issues. He always had great great counsel. We will certainly miss him. I feel as if I have a hole in my heart.
And I think there are many Americans who do. He also had this to say, and it's worth recalling, on the nature of leadership. This is from a speech he delivered in 2011, and that was after Barack Obama had actually followed his example of leadership and been elected to the nation's highest office. Here is what he said about the nature of leadership in 10 years ago.
The longer I have been in public service, and the more people have asked me about leadership over the years, leadership ultimately comes down to creating conditions of trust within an organization. Good leaders are people who are trusted by followers. Leaders take organizations past the level that the science of management says is possible. One of my sergeants back in the infantry school at Fort Benning almost 50 years ago, which is where I learned everything I ever got to learn about leadership, was at the infantry school. And he said to me one day, he said, "Lieutenant, you'll know you're a good leader when people follow you, if only out of curiosity."
And then more about his experience in infantry school. Listen.
And so they would teach us at the infantry school, no matter how cold it is, Lieutenant, you must never look cold. No matter how hungry you all are, Lieutenant, you must never appear hungry. No matter how terrified you are, Lieutenant, you must never look terrified. Because if you are scared, terrified, hungry, and cold, they will be scared, terrified, hungry, and cold. I've gotten away with that many, many times in the course of my career by being scared to death, cold, and wanting to go to sleep. But no, let's go. Let's keep going. Let's go around this corner, if only out of curiosity. And they'll follow you into the darkest night, down the deepest valley, up the highest hill, if they trust you.
And again, wouldn't it be something refreshing if our top leaders in this country remembered that lesson so that you could have the kind of trust involved, even when it comes to something as controversial that shouldn't be controversial as getting a vaccine. Today is the day that Coach Nick Rolovich of Washington State is supposed to be getting his shots. They're now saying that he is holding a mandatory meeting with players that he, well, Pat Chun, who is the athletic director at Wazoo, is going to be holding a mandatory meeting with players at 5:30 this afternoon. Wow. And so we will find out more about Coach Rolovich's future with the school. And the difficulty he has is he has applied for a religious exemption, though nobody knows what the basis for that application would be and whether it will be accepted by the university. And a religious exemption from what? From getting the kind of vaccination that everybody else who works at Wazoo, who is working with kids, particularly in an athletic capacity, particularly in a capacity where they're practicing football much of the week and there is a lot of physical proximity. I mean, really, if you're going to be at football practice with young men who aren't, and no, there are no young women yet in Division I football, but this is one of those things where, yeah, there are members of the state patrol who have given up their positions. There are people in various jobs who have declined to get the vaccine and to follow the state rules. I think it's very, very unlikely they're going to make some kind of high-profile exception for the top-paid state employee. He gets what is reported to be $3.2 million a year. And that job is very much in jeopardy. As soon as there is any news on that, we will bring you that news. We will also be back with more on the impact of Colin Powell and part of how he changed America with General Barry McCaffrey coming up on the MedVet Show. Michael Medved show, Colin Powell passing into eternity at the age of 84. He had been suffering with battling with multiple myeloma, the cause of death immediately for General Powell, COVID-19. Barry McCaffrey served in the United States Army, overlapping much of the time with General Powell, served for 32 years. When he retired in 1996, which was the same year that it was almost the same year that General Powell initially retired, wasn't it, General McCaffrey?
Gosh, I'm sort of losing track. The answer is no. He retired as chairman of the JCS, and I was his three-star assistant when he retired. Wow. And then I stayed on as a promoted to four stars.
Wow. And okay, and so you obviously were his assistant. You knew him.
I knew him for years and stayed in touch with him. I talked to him a few weeks ago as he was fighting health problems. You know, Michael, something is sort of an interesting insight into Powell. Inside the U.S. Army, after 25 years of service, is probably a couple of hundred of us who are, we all know each other, and we're all going to be in charge of the Army, and we're all sort of the same experience and talent level. Occasionally, somebody's the best of the lot of us, and Powell was the best person, not just in his year group, but plus or minus a couple of years. We were actually annoyed when they made him the chairman of the JCS because the Army wanted him as our chief of staff. He was just remarkably talented and kind and thoughtful and tremendous leadership attributes.
I know that there was a great deal of speculation about him running for president at some point. His autobiographies, plural, were tremendous popular successes, inspired the country. What do you think his thinking was for him to step aside from that ultimate step into national leadership?
Yeah, well, when he retired from the JCS, remember, he was coming out of service as it was the Gallup polls at the time. He had the highest favorability rating in history of the Gallup polls. Just a remarkably widespread sense of admiration and trust, not just from the first Gulf War, but from everything he stood for in his life. I think he had a fairly low ego, unusual for Washington inside the Beltway. And he was a private person, and so was his wife, Alma. So I think that's the only impediment. I often think how much better the country would have been had he been the candidate for presidency and served in office for 8 years, the kinds of troubles that we might well have avoided.
And again, one of the things that is very impressive when you read the obituaries is if he, of course, admitted and repeatedly referred to his mistake in making that speech at the UN about the weapons of mass destruction, which was based on faulty information, which wasn't his fault. But he delivered those words and owned up to them. And other than that, it's very difficult. I mean, when you look at a life lived the way he lived it in such patriotic commitment, and I had the great privilege of meeting him once very briefly. And what do you think people would be most surprised about who don't know General Powell as you did?
Yeah, well, probably a lot of things. But first of all, a tremendous sense of humility, of a humble man. I'd watch him walk into a, you know, White House gala dinner or a reception, 300 people in the room, and he'd zoom in on a soldier in uniform, a police officer in uniform, a single black mother. So he was quick to reach out and support people. When he retired, the last couple of weeks he was the chairman of the JCS, he'd go down every day to this sort of public place we use for promotions and to honor people, and he'd stand there and he'd have his picture taken with everyone who wanted to have a picture with him. Then he signed every one of those photos and had them sent out. So there'd be a line of 200 people waiting to get their picture taken with him, and they were the majors in the Air Force and the secretaries, the workers in the Pentagon, just a man who placed himself in service of the country.
Right now, you I am sure share the perception that I certainly do. This is a period of extremely corrosive division and polarization in the country. Do you think that President Biden could perhaps learn something from General Powell's example in actually trying to get the unity that he had promised and campaigned for?
Yeah, well, I think we all could. And I think, you know, to be blunt, I think President Biden is a kindly man, a thoughtful man, an honest politician trying to bring the country together. But your larger point is well taken. This is a period of such corrosive, angry, illogical political division. It beggars the mind. The far left, the far right are just unwilling to take positions that would satisfy the broad majority of the American people. some of the Republicans are, many of them, such a foul lot, it's beyond belief. They're unconstitutional. They're authoritarian. And then on the left, we're watching an inability of the so-called progressives with this tiny majority in both houses of Congress. Looks like they're destroying poor Mr. Biden's legacy of service. They're not cooperating. So I don't know who could deal with this current environment successfully, but certainly Colin Powell represents honesty, dignity, thoughtfulness. He listened to experts and to other people's viewpoints, and that's sadly lacking in our political discourse today.
Well, when you talk about that, the one thing that amazes me most, General, is the fact that there are people who are willing to give up their careers in order to avoid a vaccine that could save their lives. And the notion that there's so much bitterness, not about efforts to kill you, because, I mean, you really have to be demented to think that there is some kind of nefarious purpose to the COVID-19 vaccines. But the notion that people are willing to break off friendships, to break off business associations, to end careers on this issue, I never thought I'd see such a thing. Did you?
No, I don't think it's happened in the history of the country. We've seen mass hysteria before, Jonestown, you know. So we know it, that the phenomena, the madness of crowds does occur. But, you know, and by the way, the anti-vaxxers, we'd like to dismiss them as demented or uneducated or, you know, but it's more, and it's more than an ideology or a political stance. They're taking a position that literally makes no sense. 700,000 dead, for God's sakes, and 9 out of 10 of them are unvaccinated. So not only does it make no sense to lose your career as a firefighter or a police officer or a public servant, but what
football
about
coach,
putting yourself and your family at risk of dying?
Yeah, no, this entire conflict, it seems to me, cannot work out well for the country. The only way it was when the conflict is resolved or disappears or the pandemic plays itself out. But I know that you've worked in public health, and at least when you were drug czar, as they say, I think there was a universal agreement that the country would benefit from getting some of this destructive, self-destructive drug use under control. Here, there are people who actually think it's a bad thing if more people get vaccinated, which is astonishing.
We can't deal with it. I can't encompass it mentally. It's just bizarre.
Well, I do have to say, I was thinking about it today, that when Colin Powell was a boy, just a young boy, and because he was born, obviously, before the end of World War II, the Army was segregated. It hadn't been integrated yet by President Truman. And as one of the many reminders of how far we have come as a nation, you look at this most admired American, this most honored American, this great American patriot, who once upon a time would not be serving alongside white troops. Amazing. Amazing the progress, and may it only continue for this greatest nation on God's green earth.